Welcome, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm your host, Paul Niefer, and today we're going to have a conversation with Tony Schwark from, North Central Iowa? Whereabouts are you located, Tony?
We're right in the center of the state, on the northern edge. We're 10 miles from the Minnesota border, a little town called Wrightsville.
Okay, so you're near the, what is it called, the Flojo Casino right there on I-35, or what's that thing called?
Oh, Diamond Joe.
Diamond Joe. Well, I was close. Flo Joe, Diamond Joe. But I've driven by that thing so many times because I do a lot of driving between Minneapolis and Des Moines when I'm in the Midwest. And I've stopped at the, there's a little service station there that's pretty nice. I've stopped there a few times.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'd be straight east of there.
Are you guys getting hit by the drought a little bit? Or are you okay? Or I shouldn't say drought, but I mean, I know Western Iowa has been dry, but it seems like I-35 is sort of the dividing line. So I'm wondering how you guys are looking.
Well, I hate to say it, but we are the lucky ones this year. We're very blessed. We've had timely rains and we got a really nice crop growing.
Okay, good. I have some ground east and south of you, probably about 100 and some miles. And according to my farmer that's growing the crop, he says it's looking really good too. So but you know, that isn't true every year.
No, okay.
Well, we always start off with sort of a brief outline of your where you started from, your career, and going into the farm operation. But let's just go through what's your background.
Well, I'm a third generation farmer. I've been blessed with good mentors. My dad's still active, my grandfather's still active. They both ran successful operations. I've been involved, you know, all through high school, always had an interest, graduated high school in 2003, started right in the farming operation. More so, you know, my need then was as a laborer. That's where I filled the gap. That's how they brought me on board. And as time went on, every year they just put more responsibility into my hands. You know, whenever they had some important meetings, even when I was young, I was always there listening. So I gained a lot of knowledge through them. My wife, you know, we got married along the way. My wife, Erica, she's very involved in our operation. She keeps our books. She helps in the operation when she's needed. She'll run a tractor. She'll help at the feed yard. So she's involved also. I got a brother that he's very knowledgeable in the cattle industry. So he's a great asset to have. So we're a very, very family oriented operation here. We got two children. It's actually my daughter Annalise's sixth birthday today.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So she's having a special day. And then we have a son, Axton, and he's three. So that's kind of the gist of our operation.
Well, the good news, if they're six and three, they still think mom and dad are pretty smart and pretty special. You give about another 10 years, you may or may not be so lucky.
I fully understand.
Yeah. Of course, we go back to that time period for us. Maybe we didn't treat our parents the best either. You know, you never know. You just never know. So I know that you started out, but then you were sort of running the numbers. I know both you and your wife are very number oriented. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but what made your decision to go into the beef finishing side?
Well, as you know, as we gained our parents and grandparents' confidence, you know, they were kind of stepping back. We had a really successful grain operation, a row crop operation. And the one thing, you know, that we had some time, you know, we had a leg. We had late summers were slow, you know, you get ready for harvest, but you had some time, and winters were always they were always kind of a slow time. And then you go to that numbers thing. When I sat down and thought, well, how can we complement this row crop operation without having to go to town, get jobs? So the first thing that came to mind, we looked at these hog integrators, and we were pretty close to pulling the trigger, because what we needed to do at that time, we needed to expand. to really utilize our team efforts. And we needed to have some depreciating assets to go along our way. And the hog barns, they fulfilled that. There's a lot of good things about them, but the thing that took me further in our operation that took us to the beef feeding operation was utilizing the corn as a feedstock. We can take the corn, homegrown corn, and feed it to those beef animals. And that's what pushed us over the edge. That's what got us into the beef feeding operation. We got our depreciation that we're looking for. Plus we get to utilize the corn, and it saved us. We're also at a stage where, well, if we keep continuing to grow the grain operation and put, even with the hog up or the hog setup, we were going to have to expand our drying setup and our truck infrastructure. So this just kind of, it really has complemented what we already had established. I'll put it that way.
So on your corn, the corn that you're using to feed the beef, are you doing more of a high moisture and then putting it in a pit, or because you were talking about having to increase your drying and so on, is that what you're doing? I'm just sort of curious for the listeners out there.
That's exactly what we're doing. So we still had to put in some facilities. We put in some bunkers, some cement bunkers. We got some commodity sheds. So we still had some facilities that were needed, but we're able to utilize that corn wet to the, and we can start our harvest sooner. So that's been a big plus.
So when, for the listeners out there, you know, they understand, okay, we got corn that we're going to sell to an elevator and we got to dry it down to whatever the moisture is, 12, 14, whatever, 15, whatever it might be. When are you typically harvesting high moisture corn, and what's sort of that sweet spot that you like the moisture to be at?
Well, when we put corn in the bunker for earlage, that's when we're taking the whole, the cob, the husk, and the whole cob and husk, and we grind that, and we get a product that we call earlage.
Yep.
When we do that, we like, you know, if we could be out there when the whole field black layers, about 30 to 32% is ideal on that product. And high moisture corn, you know, we like to see that around 22 to 24%.
Okay. So on your yearlage, again, for the listeners, because I know I've not had a podcast yet where we've used the term yearlage. Now, out in our area, we have a fair amount of that. But so how do you harvest that where you're actually just getting... Is there something you have to do with the combine, or is this a different piece of equipment? But just for the listeners, go through how that process is.
So the custom, we hire this done. It's a chopper, a forage harvester, and they take the silage or the row, or they take the silage head off, and they put in a kernel processor into their machine, and then they just take a standard corn head and put that on their machine, and that's they're gathering all the ears and the husks, and they're grinding it into one mix. So that's how they do
that. Okay. Like I say, I'm pretty sure this is the first time on a podcast I've used the word yearlage. So,
and then now to snaplage as well.
Snaplage. So what is snaplage then?
It's the same term, just it's taking the cob and the whole ear and grinding it into a feed.
Okay, so in the actual forage harvester, they're doing all the grinding there, or do you have to then do further grinding at your end?
No, once it's through that forage harvester, it goes into a silage wagon, and they dump that into our bunker, and we pack that. We pack that with the packing tractor and squeeze all the oxygen out of it, and then we cover it with the plastic barrier, and then put tires on top to keep the air out.
Yep. And then that'll store for months or even longer, doesn't it?
Yeah, like right now we're finishing up a year's worth. We're just about out of last year's and ready for new crop.
Now, in our area in the West, when we think of beef finishing or a feedlot, we're typically thinking of a large open air, you know, we got fencing and so on, but it's open air, the cattle are outside all the time. But, you know, typically when I'm going through the Midwest and I see a beef finishing, I see it more under a shelter. What type of operation do you have?
Oh, we have a little bit of everything. So our main facility is a monage slope. So it is open to the south. It collects sunlight, has a roof, it's an overhead roof. It collects sunlight and it lets good airflow through. They work well in the Midwest. They're very popular, and those cattle are on rubber mats. It's a slatted facility, so the manure, it's pretty modern. The manure goes below. We pump that manure twice a year in the spring and the fall. So that's where we do our finishing. So when the cattle get to be 900 to 1,000 pounds, we put them in there for the last finishing phase. But when we also have some backgrounding facilities, which are open yards, they got some kind of shelters, some sheds somewhere, a little more space. We start cattle there with good working facilities on board. And we've also, we're kind of in that, you know, that buzzword floating around, cover crops. Everybody's talking about cover crops. And we found a niche with cover crops. So if you drive by our farm today, you'll see a herd of cow-calf pairs out there grazing. You know, we're trying to capture that whole cycle. We're planting the cover crops, but then we're grazing them off with these cows. And so we got a little bit of everything. We're pretty diverse in our cattle operation, and it seems to be working pretty good.
Good. Now, in your backgrounding, where are you buying that cattle from? Are you getting that out of Kansas, Oklahoma? Is it local, or where would you be buying that from?
Well, we like to go west, not always. Our main concern is a good quality calf. If we can find them local, we'd sure like to keep them local, but we go into South Dakota quite a bit, Eastern Montana. We've developed some relationships out there with some good people, and they send us good quality animals consistently. So we like that area.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's well, and then my dad was born in South Dakota, Selby, South Dakota. So I got a little warm heart for South Dakota, even though I don't live there. I still got a warm heart there. So
you bet.
So now, before you actually got into the beef finishing, you were, you know, a row crop operation. Let's maybe back up a minute and just describe, you know, what did that look like before you went into the beef finishing side?
Well, I guess when I started, a lot of labor. You know, I was a hands-on guy, working in the shop, getting machinery ready, and then also, you know, I was out there in the fields doing the spraying, the side dressing, hauling the grain, watching, you know, filling bends, and then also, you know, I still do keeping track of the bends. Once you get the grain in the bends, you know, make sure it's storing well, it's not going bad on you, keeping it in good condition. Just the everyday, what is needed every day on that operation. And we still do that. So we took two operations and we combined them, but it was just a lot more seat time, I would say. From planting, spraying, side dressing, to harvest. That was what we did.
Okay. And then as far as your operation today, maybe number of acres you're farming, maybe the number of head of cattle that you're finishing, and how many employees do you have?
Well, today we've kept our acre base. You know, we consistently farm around 2,000 acres. We have added some grassland for pasture for grazing, but we've consistently managed about 2,000 acres. A lot of that, you know, is family ground. We got quite a bit of rent. I'd say half and half is family ground and half rented.
Okay.
So that's been a pretty good balance. And then we've added on any given day, we like to have around 1,200 to 1,500 head of cattle on feed. They're not all necessarily at our place, but we have some backgrounders that'll background some cattle for us. So we like to have around 1,200 to 1,500 head of cattle on feed. And we've, in the past couple of years, we've added a beef cow. operation, and we've got around 300 cow calf pairs around now too. So that's kind of a gist of our operation. We have two full time, very good guys. They're well rounded. I got lucky here that they really love livestock. They're good at it, and they're good operators too. And we got a guy that's part time. He's a pretty good mechanic. And you know, my wife and I, my dad loves to run the combine. that's what he does. So he runs the combine. My mom, she's very good. She brings us, she cooks, and she keeps us fed. So that's kind of how we operate up here, I guess.
That sounds like a lot of farm operations. Yeah, I'm like your dad. If I was a farmer, I'd be out operating the combine. You know, a couple weeks ago, I was up on my ground that I lease out, and I was riding the combine, and I was really enjoying it because we were actually on some fairly steep ground. Not the steepest ground I've ever been on, but you know, it's the type of ground where you know you're going to slide down the hill a little bit when you're cutting, and if you start going down a hill, you got to brace yourself so you don't go hitting the windshield. So that for me, that's the fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for the flatlanders like in Iowa, you know, maybe not so much. So
we don't know much about those hills.
Well, you know, if you go to eastern Iowa, I know over on the Mississippi area river and then the Missouri river, there's some breaks over there that probably got that 20-30% slope. But, you know, in our area, we're talking 40-50 or 60% slope. So that gets a little steeper.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Well, if you look back, you've been doing this for approximately 20 years plus, you know, we know as a teenager and, you know, probably like me, there's several photos of me on the combine when I'm 6 months old, you know, sitting on my dad's lap and so on. But if you look back on what you've done, what did you do right? What did you do wrong? And maybe what would you do over?
Well, that's a loaded question. You know, it seems some days it seems like we're doing more wrong than right, but it all averages out. But I guess what we've done right, we've done a good job of finding balance. I feel that that's important in a farming operation. My goal is for this operation is that the row crop and the cattle operation are complementing each other and walking hand in hand. So we're not supplementing one to take care of the other. So that's kind of my goal right now. And I spend a lot of time making sure that each operation is carrying its weight. And, you know, right now the beef cattle prices are a little slugged. We've been fighting that. But the manure from these animals is so valuable. It's a wash. So that's our goal, is to finding that balance. And I think we've done a pretty good job at that. What we've done wrong, you know, some of this stuff, it takes a lot of time. You know, maybe we should, you know, for a couple of years, we were pretty underpowered. Could have used some more labor, maybe some more machinery. We were watching the budget more so than the operation. We maybe should have added some loader capacity, some spreader capacity, maybe some more manpower. So now, you know, I've really made investment in people. That's our investment that we've made this past year, is we need to get good people on board here, make sure that they're taken care of, and make sure they know that we couldn't do this without them. So right now our goal is to make that investment in the people. And we've done that. We've got, like I've said, we've got some really good guys. Think the world of them. And that's the key, keeping everybody, you know, not every day is easy, but to make sure everybody's able to get over the hill and keep moving forward. And I think we're getting there. It's a everyday struggle, but we're getting there.
Is there anything you do over differently?
You know, maybe some of the, you know, when we were in the building phase, you know, I definitely would have added the facility sooner. they've really, they're worth their, in our climate, when then we got the cold, harsh winters, the wet springs, the facilities, I'm not going to say they're necessary, but they are nice. They are nice, and they allow you to manage your time better. So I if we had to go back to when we started, we if I could do it over again, we would have added the facilities right away and just started from there.
Well, and again, you are a relatively younger producer. What is good about being a young producer, and maybe what is bad about being a younger producer?
Well, I guess I'm kind of a tweener now. I'm not sure where to categorize myself in, but having youth on your side, you know, that optimism, that energy that you have, and the excitement, it's new. You're eager to greet each day. That's, you know, even when we go to these young farmer events, that's what I take away from them is the energy that the youth possess. That's, you know, that's great. I would say that having that drive would be the best thing for the young producer. And the bad part about it is, oh man, building in agriculture today, the amount of capital required, that's tough when you're, you know, if you step into the land auction, the local land auction, and you say, all right, I'm going to buy this farm. That's tough for a young producer. So that would have, that's kind of a detriment right now. So those two, the having the drive is a great thing, but you know, the equity in today's world, it's a challenge.
It is a challenge. You know, it's just, well, you know, every week, you know, I get I look at Twitter and so on when the land is going for in Iowa, and you know, it's 10, 15, well, 10's on the low side, it's 15, 20,000, 25,000. Then you go to other parts of the country, you go back to central Pennsylvania and it starts at 25,000. So, you know, it's just a lot of capital to become a new farmer, whether you're young or not. If you want to become a new farmer, you know, it's sort of like the old joke. I remember hearing this joke when I was a kid, you know, how do you make a small fortune in farming? You start with a large one. So, you know, that's sort of the reality these days at times.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, Tony, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break for a sponsor message, and then we'll come back and continue the conversation.
Okay.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm Paul Niefer, your host, and we're going to go ahead and rejoin our conversation with Tony Schwartz from northern, almost Minnesota, but northern Iowa. And now, Tony, you have a couple younger kids. You have a six-year-old daughter and a three-year-old son, if I remember right. I think I got that right. Have you started thinking about any type of succession plan for them?
Yes and no. It's now, you're exactly right. Now's the time we need to be putting these in places. We talked about the capital required if they're going to be involved in agriculture. We need to start them young. But I guess coming from a family farming operation, I need to figure out first, I guess what my focus is right now is to figure out where their interests lie, because some of the things I've seen fail in some of these operations were putting two people that have or different mindsets together can sometimes be a challenge. So my goal right now with my children is to figure out their interests and how we can combine them to make them work together, and then go from there. So that's what I'll be in the next several years. I'll be kind of watching them, see, hey, what, because, you know, my goal, I have a son and a daughter. My goal, my daughter can do anything the son can. Agriculture's changed. I hope that both of them come on board and we can make things work. So, yeah, our succession planning needs to start now. And each year we need to give more thought to it so we're prepared for it.
Now, in your history, it sounded like that you joined the farming operation right out of high school. As far as for your kids, do you want them to go to college and then maybe have a career outside of farming, the family farm, for a couple of years? Or is your motivation, you'd love to have them start right away? There's no one right answer. I know a lot of operations, you do have to, you know, have a career somewhere else just to make sure that you really want to be a farmer. I'm just curious if you thought about that yet.
Yeah. You know, depending on how tired dad is at the time, I guess we'll make that decision, but that's a joke. They need to get, and I too, when we didn't have the beef operation, I had some off farm experiences, and they're valuable. That's the time to do it, to get out there and really figure out what it is if you're not passionate about something,
yep,
it's going to be hard to do it. So they need to find their passion. And that comes from within each person. So that, yeah, I would like to see them explore different venues and hope after doing that, that, hey, yeah, we want it. Because if they're going to be a part of the operation, we want them passionate about it. And we want them to succeed.
Exactly. I've been involved in some operations where you have the discussion with mom and dad, and they're eagerly awaiting the son or the daughter to be involved. And then you have the discussions with the son and the daughter, and they're like, the only reason we're involved in this farm is because we think mom and dad want us involved. It's really not our passion. And it's like, that's just a recipe for disaster at that point.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Now, I know that your wife Erica is involved on the financial side, and I know that both of you really like to crunch your numbers. And since I'm a CPA, I like hearing that. For the listeners out there, just go over why having good accounting, knowing your costing, knowing your financial structure really helps you make much better management decisions.
Well, you know, my wife Erica, she's very talented. She can keep records. She's very good with the records, and I lean on her. Sometimes she gets frustrated with me, but I lean on her because having that knowledge, everybody, in my opinion, and what I try to do, everybody's goal is to make money. You know that you won't be in business if you're not, but we run a cash basis accounting system, so we have to be, we have to be checked and balanced every year, so we can come through, we can show a huge profit. But then at the end of the year, you catch people scrambling, like, oh my goodness, we had a great year. So what I try to do throughout the year is to balance it, make sure we're showing steady growth, because the bank's not going to want to be partners with us if we're not. But don't show huge, you don't want to show a lot, but you don't want to, trying to find that balance. So having that record and knowing where you're at allows you, hey, do we need to buy some fertilizers? Do we need to get some feed purchased? What do we need to do here versus being forced into a situation? Or do we need to hold a pen of cattle into the new year? Where are we at? You have to have an understanding of where your operation is so you can make the smart decisions to keep moving forward.
Yeah, no, it's and that's the one thing I really see more so on the livestock side, whether it's dairy, whether it's beef finishing, whether it's hog finishing, poultry, whatever it might be, is that it seems like you crunch your numbers a whole lot better than on the row crop side. That's just sort of the observation that I see all the time.
Yeah, and it's capital. You know, when we added the livestock system, it's capital intensive. So you can think you're on top of the world, and boy, we got some area for margin. And then, you know, you get some, just like now these feeder cattle are jumping up in prices, and your line of credits might not be where they need to be because they're costing, you know, $400 or $500 a head more. So you just, it takes a lot of time in the office and understanding where you're at, and otherwise it'd be pretty easy to take a step in the wrong direction if you're not watching your P's and Q's.
Yeah, no, it's definitely that way. You were named the Top Producer Horizon Award winner back in 2019. I'm just curious how that process went, and what, if you learned anything from that, or I was just curious how that went.
Yeah, that was one of the most humbling experiences of our operations history. You know, that when Sarah Schaefer made the call and told us that we had won that, but I just kind of was like, wow. So it was a very humbling moment, and it's been a lot of fun, Paul. You know, going to these top producer summits, and we are gaining so much knowledge just in the networking side. We've been blessed with wonderful contacts that are just full of knowledge and great people. So that's been, of all of that, the best takeaway would be the network that has been given to us here that we're taking full advantage of. We've learned a lot. So that's been pretty. And then also meeting the past winners and the previous winner. That's been a lot of fun too. And networking with them and saying, well, what's working, what's not working. And it's just been a great experience. And we're very thankful for the opportunity.
Okay. It's, you know, I know that I've certainly been involved with Top Producer now. I can't believe it's, I think, 12 years now, 11 or 12 years. And it's great getting around, seeing those operations such as yours that are progressive and seem to know what they're doing. Now, we know there's days where you don't feel like you know what you're doing, but on average, you definitely know what you're doing.
Well, we try to act like we do.
Yeah. Now, we're getting close to the end of our conversation. I always ask two questions. So the first question I'm going to ask is, what keeps you up at night?
You know, sometimes the challenge is, you know, not only being an operator, you have to, you know, every day I put my boots on and try to make sure everything's moving smoothly, but keeping the numbers in check. When I lay down at night and things slow down and I lay there and I think, that's when I kind of do my own. So you worked all day, you've seen what happened. At night when I'm laying there, I'm thinking about the budget and where we need to put dollars. And so that, trying to shut your mind off, but that's kind of the routine I built my life around, is when things slow down, that's when my mind can kind of work. And so that's what keeps me up at night, is crunching numbers.
Yep. Well, that's sounds a little bit, well, yeah, I'm, you know, if people were to ask me that question, there's not too much that keeps me up at night. I'm just trying to think what might keep me up at night. It would probably be crunching some numbers too. So, Now, and then the last question I always like to ask is, what is your definition of success in farming?
Well, I said it once, but it goes back to me. If you're passionate, if you wake up every day and you're ready to get outside and greet the day, that's success in my mind. Because if you're not enjoying what you're doing, it's going to be tough to be successful. So I would say if you are passionate about the ag industry and you just smile going to work, you're successful.
Yeah. No, I tend to agree. I mean, it's And every time I ask this question, you know, the answers are sort of along that same bent, and farming is definitely something that both you and I have a passion for, and I think it shows through.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to go over today?
No, I want to just thank you for your time, and it's been a lot of fun here having this conversation.
Well, definitely, I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for being on the podcast. And again, this is the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I am Paul Niefer, your host, signing off.
My buddy Kyle here is going to help me tell you about Corteva
and
the power of
and.
You see, Intrepid Edge insecticide combines fast knockdown
and
lasting residual activity for proven results.
And
it has two modes of action that deliver effective control against robbing insects, like leaf miners
and
armyworms
and
corn borers
and
loopers.
And
oh, lunchtime. Thanks, Kyle.
And
visit intrepidedge.corteva.us to learn more.